Hey everybody, welcome to the Mental Toughness and Body Show. My name is Rob Evans and I'm your transformation coach and health strategist. And today I want to talk to you about food science, AI, and the future of foods. I don't know whether you've given it much thought, but just think about for a moment how much food has evolved. If I think about when I was a child, I can remember it's probably, I was born in 1968. So mid-70s, I suppose. I can remember being in, my dad used to have this enormous vegetable garden. And I can remember planting, he used to have a guy at his work where he would get the like onions from, and I can remember they'd come wrapped up in newspaper in this big ball, and we'd plant that. You'd poke your finger in the ground, you'd stick down the onion plant, you know, you'd evenly space them and you'd have rows and rows of them, and you'd water them, and you know, then you'd get to harvest them, and we would have all kinds of things. Like, we'd plant corn. I used to like the corn because, you know, they were tall plants and you get to see the corn grow, and you'd pick the corn and scrape off all the ants because they always had ants on them. The carrots, tomatoes, zucchinis, pumpkins. I mean, we used to have everything. And so the seeds of the 1970s, the flavours of the foods of the 1970s are different to they are now. And I can remember, and don't quote me on the year because I couldn't tell you what it was, but I can remember when this thing was in the media about genetically modifying food and what that meant for us. And there was massive uproars and people boycotting. I'm sure that there were picketers and all kinds of different protests around, you can't genetically modify our food, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, all of these things come with a marketing message, right? So they were, I think at the time, the message that I heard was to make crops more consistent, more sustainable, more pest resistant, that kind of stuff. So they were making some changes. Now, from memory, at the time, they then talked about what's the labelling that you need to put on our food. So obviously, if there's a tomato, I mean, back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, nothing was really packaged like it is now. So it was like, well, tomatoes were just out. You know, your carrots and everything were just out. They weren't bundled up or anything like that. And so there was no label on them. So they were referring to like labeling on cans of food and package, frozen food and all that kind of stuff, and what it was going to be labeled like. And they wanted to have, you know, massive like slogans on there about it's being genetically modified and all that kind of stuff. And then there were arguments from the manufacturers saying, well, that's going to deter people from buying the food and all that kind of stuff. So certainly where we are here in Australia, I think the legislation around what needs to be labelled as genetically modified has varied quite a lot. And I think you would be struggling to find any product on our shelves that you could easily identify whether the food was genetically modified or not. And again, I'm not an expert in this field, but I would be surprised if most of the food that we are eating today is not genetically modified in some way. So what does that mean? Well, is it better that they've done something to genetically modify the food so that it is more pest resistant? Does that have an impact on nutrition? Are they making some modifications that make the food more nutritious? I think the reality is 99% of us just do not know. We have no idea. Like, I'm very passionate about food and improving food intakes for people, eating more fruits and vegetables and so forth. People say, well, you know, I just want to eat organic food. Well, what does that really mean? And I think that the problem in this space, the organic space, is that there is just not enough research to support whether organically grown vegetables are nutritionally better than their alternative. And some people will just say, well, yes, they are, but there is not adequate research to support that. And there is probably just as much evidence to show that organically grown vegetables have traces of chemicals and so forth as do the alternatives. And why is that? Well, often it's because of just drift, right? So you've got that organic farm that is just getting drift from somewhere else, other chemicals around. So the evidence that I've seen is that nobody's really willing to put the research into it at this point. At some point, it will probably happen, but the studies that are shown to support both sides have been funded by the parties that are going to benefit from it. So in other words, like take meat, for instance, you'll find that all the research that supports that meat is, say, good, is paid for by the Meat Farmers Federation or whatever. I've just made that up, but you know, whatever it is, it's the organisation that supports eating meat. The ones that are going to support, say, vegetarian or vegan are going to be from the Fruiterers Federation or whatever. So we do have some limitations there. Now, then we've got some heirloom type seeds, and that's what they're called here. But how modified are they as well? I mean, we just don't know. We don't have a lot of clarity around it. So having said all that, certainly where I notice it is a carrot today doesn't taste anything like a carrot that I used to pull out of the ground in the 1970s. I would say the same is for tomatoes and everything else as well. But that's taste. Nutritionally, I have no idea how much better or worse nutritionally our food is today versus back in, say, the 1970s or 80s. One thing I do know is that a loaf of bread, and I don't eat a lot of bread, but a loaf of bread in the 1970s would probably last you a couple of days before it started to show mold. Now, you could have it out probably for a week or more and it still won't have mold. Why? Because it's got more preservatives in it. Now, what are they doing with our fruits and vegetables? Do they put preservatives in our fruits and vegetables? Well, yes, they do. How do they do that? Well, maybe they're soaked in things. Maybe it's to do with the genetically modified nature of them to make them last longer, so they have a longer shelf life and all that. Does that then have an impact on nutritionally? To be honest, I don't know, but it would be naive to think that there aren't some spin-offs for whatever's going into our fruit, that it doesn't have some perhaps positive and some negative. It's like a medication. Medication is given to you for a particular reason. Maybe it's an antibiotic or something, and it's got all these great benefits. But like any medication, it's also got some side effects. So I think for me, the challenge is, how do we keep making our food nutritionally great? And if we can, if there is some modification, if the nutritional aspects are better, then perhaps that's a positive for us. I guess where you see some things being, well, would you say it's genetically modified? Possibly not genetically, but certainly additives. Take the one where it happens a lot is your breakfast cereals. They say, with added calcium, or you've got liquid drinks, and they say, with added such and such vitamins and all that. Vitamin water is a good example where it doesn't necessarily have a lot of vitamins in it, but they're putting things into it to give you those boosts. Because people are eating more and more processed food, eating less and less fruits and vegetables, and therefore their health is declining, their weight is increasing, and we're starting to live in more of a society where people's health is just getting worse and worse and worse. And I guess people are not making making the change. I know that in my area here, and just in Australia in general, the adults, I think it's something like, I don't know, 75 to 80% of adults do not eat the recommended daily intake of vegetables. Fruits, we're talking about maybe a couple of pieces of fruit a day is like your recommended daily serve, but your vegetables, it's like 5 to 7 serves there. And most people are not doing that. And so that's not supporting their long-term health. They're not cleansing their body. They're not getting the nutrients they need, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you're then eating more processed food as well, like if you laid out all the food that you eat for a day and you say, wow, yeah, there's a lot of processed food here. It's more calorie dense and nutritionally starved, then you know that over the long term, that is not going to be great for you. So now, what's the future of food? So if you think about how they use AI in this space as well, I mean, we're talking about the one that I hear most about is, say, lab-grown meat. And when you just say that, it sounds disgusting, doesn't it? We do have a crisis with the supply of food in different parts of the world. I'm quite lucky where we live here. We have pretty ready access to food here. But the price of food, like where I live here in Melbourne, Australia, it's one of the most expensive places to live in the world now. Property prices are probably the single biggest killer of people. I mean, there's a house around the corner in my street here that I don't know the exact price, but I know that they were asking about $1.4 million for the house, a house probably a little smaller than my home here. Nicely appointed though, it's got a swimming pool, and it was only on the market for like 4 days. So you would think that it's probably sold for $1.4 million. Now that would be one of the biggest prices, if not the biggest price in my estate here. And like the cost of food and everything here compared to other parts of the world is also quite expensive. The cost of living in terms of your utilities and so forth is also quite high here. So it's a very expensive place to live. And so if you think about on a global scale where we're getting bigger and bigger all the time, we're getting more and more people, there's more and more demand, space is for farming and for animals and crops is getting less and less. So there's this increased pressure. And even though veganism didn't really exist in the 1970s, certainly not in a big public way anyway, to what it is now, there's just more and more pressure and demand for different types of products. But there's still a huge demand for meat. Like most of the population are still meat eaters. And if we are having less access to animals and that concept of, well, can we do it another way without killing animals and that kind of stuff, then that's where the lab-grown meat comes into it. So I believe Bill Gates is involved with some investment here. What does it really mean? Well, I guess the concept sounds a bit nasty because you're taking meat cells and you're creating meat and from, you know, like in test tubes and that kind of stuff. And It seems like a concept that we're just not used to. But let's take another look at it. Is it actually better and healthier than what we're doing at the moment? I don't actually know the answer to that because conceptually you could say, well, yeah, it's more sterile, it's cleaner, it's more protein rich, et cetera, versus the argument of, well, the animal's out in nature, it's eating nature's food, et cetera, et cetera. But then also, getting back to the genetically modified part, if you have an animal, this is how it works in Australia anyway, if you have an animal that is eating genetically modified feed, then you do not have to disclose that it's a genetically modified food. Now, of course, what logic would say is, well, let's just say it's eating genetically modified pellets along with its hay and green stuff that's growing out of the ground, then it would be reasonable to expect that the food is going to be genetically modified. If I'm eating genetically modified food, I guess you could say, well, I'm going to be genetically modified, aren't I? If somebody's eating me, that's maybe a horrible example. But the animal is going to become genetically modified. Maybe scientists would argue, well, no, that's not the case. But that doesn't have to be disclosed. But is it reasonable to think that genetically modified food, whatever it is, vitamins, etc., is going to be absorbed into the bloodstream of the animal and therefore go into the meat? Otherwise, why would you be feeding it genetically modified food? You're getting it to grow, whether it's hormones, whether it's God knows what. It's probably not hormones, because I think that does have to be disclosed. And there are some restrictions around what you're able to do in that space. So anyway, the point is, coming back to the lab, then obviously they're growing it in very sterile circumstances. Is it safe? Is it healthy? I guess we're not going to know, but I think the reality is, at some point, even though it sounds horrible, to me, it's like the genetically modified food conversation back in whenever it started, and now people don't even think about it. It's just probably everything's genetically modified in some way. It's just that we've accepted it. And I think probably the meat is, it's not going to stop, because they want to try and address what the global problem is to feed our world. We're running out of space, and people still love meat. Then it will continue to go. AI, I imagine, is just going to be used as part of that process in some way, to speed up the process, to work out, okay, what do we need to modify? All right, we want to. So imagine this. Imagine that, let's just say, for instance, for simplicity, that your beef grown in a lab it's just the same nutritional benefit. Let's just say it's that, right? But now let's say, okay, well, we can actually now make it leaner, and we can make it with more protein in it. I tell you, there'd be every gym-going person like me, the health focus, that was like, well, wow, give me more of that. It's like your kangaroo. Your kangaroo is one of the leanest meats you can get, and it's higher in protein, slightly. But it can be hard to get. So now imagine that you've got these products that are, let's say that they're now a little bit cheaper, or they're the same price, but they're healthier because they've got more protein and they're leaner as well. All of a sudden, that becomes more attractive. So to me, it comes down to nutritional benefit, it comes down to safety, and then making sure that there is so many controls, almost like a pharmaceutical grade manufacturing processes and techniques and security measures in place around these places to ensure that nothing can go wrong, because it's going to take quite some time for people to get used to the idea that, well, it's okay to eat lab-grown meat. And look, to be honest, I don't know whether there's any commercial aspect of it in the world at the moment, or whether it's still in groundbreaking stages. I'd say we know the work's going on. So at some point, or somewhere in the world, somebody's eating lab-grown meat right now, because somebody's got to be testing it, I suppose. It's interesting. It's interesting to see where we're going to get to. I'm talking about what it was like for me as a child in 1974, 1970s, so 50 years ago. What's it going to be like in another 50 years? I think the reality is we're going to be eating very differently. If I think about the number of prepackaged foods that existed in the 1970s, I'm sure that there were some TV dinners, but that's what they used to call them. In foil with the cardboard, you'd peel back the little lip of the container, and it would be like a roast and like roast potatoes and peas and carrots or something. can still remember them actually. I'm sure they existed to some extent, but if you look at how many pre-done meals there are on the market now, it is just crazy. The number of new products that are on the shelves are just crazy. And yet the fresh part has either gotten smaller or remained the same. People are driven to eating more processed stuff that comes out of a packet as opposed to eating the fresh stuff. So we've got to make sure that we increase our focus on getting the healthy food in. We've got to make sure that we place so much reliance on the legislation and governments to protect our food and our food sources so that we don't just end up eating, as Steve Wozniak said, Apple co-founder, we don't just keep eating coloured clay because everything is just so modified. So we need to make sure that we are continuing to look after our food security and our food nutrition. And this is why I do what I do. We've got plenty of it available right now, and yet people still choose to eat something different. Why? Maybe it's because of flavour, it's laziness, lack of knowledge, and just the alternatives. Like in my area here, and we've got a mixed bag of socioeconomic diversity. Here you've got houses that are worth like millions and millions of dollars here, and you've got people that are renting at the, and even some homeless people. And the number of high quality restaurants here, I think we've maybe two in the area. The rest are like, there are so many fast food outlets, so it's ridiculous. And I don't know, it's frustrating. But we have plenty of fresh food available in our supermarket. It's hard to drive 5 minutes in my area, and I mean, we must have, I don't know, eight or more supermarkets in a 10-kilometre radius here. Like, it's ridiculous how many we've got, and yet people are still going into those food outlets and choosing poorer food choices. So it's a constant education process. Hey, come on, you want to feel better, you want to look better, you want to take care of your health, you want to have more energy, then you've got to change what it is that you're eating so that you're getting more nutrition into your body. So anyway, that is my thought for the day about food, where it's going, how AI is going to be used in the process of helping support us. It has the ability to be able to create a better human race. Of course, that's subject to biases and so forth of the people that are creating the AI and how it's then used. But it can be used for the greater good for us. And I think the more and more work in that area can only be a good thing. But the role that you can play for you right now is keep looking after your health and wellness. And if you really don't know, like I did a meal plan with somebody just last night, and this is somebody that is very close to, like, they have, I would say that their lifestyle is certainly way healthier than most people, but she's just missing the key aspects of success for her. So she's looking to put the edge of her health and wellness, and she's just missing some key components. And so I'm providing her with what the exact solution is for her, getting in some more protein, getting in some more plant-based food. She thought that she needed to exclude those high-energy carbs. And it's like, well, no, you need to include them. They're a fundamental key macronutrient that you need to get in. It's just that it's the timing of when you get it in the volume where most people get it wrong. So I'm now filling that gap for her. So if you want me to help you in this space of getting your food right, your energy right, and just know that you're living your best life, then go to mentaltoughnessandbodyshow.com and you can opt in for a free consultation right there. I work with people all around the world. All right, stay safe, everybody. Stay healthy. I'll see you tomorrow.